Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, on a mission to create remodeling experiences worthy of 5-star online reviews. See the difference at callmosby.com.
Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Sarah Fenske. Earlier this week, the Trump administration set off a firestorm. Perhaps that is not news, but this White House announcement certainly was. The administration said it planned to enforce a rule that international students must take in-person classes to be in the country on student visas. That's even though COVID-19 has many universities adjusting plans for the fall semester. Some are going online only. Others plan to only partially reopen their campuses. And up to 1 million students could be affected. Some of those students had planned to study in St. Louis, or at least study with professors based here. And so joining us today to talk about what this decision means for students and local colleges alike is Jim Hacking. He is an attorney who specializes in immigration law. He's with the Hacking Law Practice. So, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined today by Mark Kamimura Jimenez. He's the Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Dean of the Center for Diversity and Inclusion at Washington University. So, Mark, welcome.
Thank you.
Jim, I want to start with you. I understand this rule has been on the books for a while now. Why do the administration's plans to enforce it seem like such a big deal to so many people?
Well, it's just one more instance of the Trump administration really assaulting legal immigration. They've couched a lot of their rhetoric and their actions saying that they're going after, quote unquote, illegal immigration. But this is just one of the harshest and cruelest of many things that they've done. And I think the reason it caused such a furor is because the school year is about to start in about 5 or 6 weeks. We have international students who are already here and those who are planning on coming, and schools that are willing and happy to accept them in various capacities. But because of COVID, we're looking to do more and more of their classes online. And I think people are looking at this as an attempt by the president to boost his poll numbers by trying to get the economy kickstarted by forcing these international students to go back to school.
Mark, were the administration's plans on this, was this a surprise to those of you in higher education?
Yes, we did not expect the magnitude of impact that this policy came in and the timing. I mean, I think the timing is crucial because our students have been trying to They just, you know, kind of in the middle of their summer, trying to adjust to a new life indoors or partially outdoors when they can. But The reality is that classes looked different in the spring, and they're going to look different in the fall. And we are preparing to, open up our campus as a hybrid in a hybrid model. And this changes a lot of that.
And so doing that hybrid model, you weren't going to do online only. It wasn't like every single class was going to be just meeting online. But how does that model get affected by this rule, assuming that, Trump goes forward with it, it holds up to lawsuits? What will that mean you'll have to change?
Well, I think that it means that we have to look at the health concerns of specifically our international students who feel like if they aren't they feel like they may be at risk of getting sick, or if they were to get sick, that it would have major implications on their health. Mm-hmm. We have to be thoughtful about how to move forward and around those kinds of in-person if we're forced to do so. But we're trying to make sure that our students have that choice to protect themselves and their health.
And I know Washington University has a lot of international students. Give us a sense of the numbers. Like, what percentage of the student body are we talking about here?
So it's 24% of our students are international students. Mm-hmm. And it's split up interestingly because our undergrads are about 9% of our undergrads are international, but 38% of our graduate students are international. And so there's a huge impact on that student community as well.
And this might be a really dumb question, but as somebody who has never done a postgraduate degree, I know a lot of times they end up teaching classes, not just taking them. How does that impact that? They're not allowed to teach these classes online exclusively either. They'd also have to come in to instruct.
Well, that's kind of, these are a lot of the questions that we're trying to answer. So there's a lot within this policy that was unclear. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered, a lot of ambiguous language in terms of what any of this means for instruction, as you know, for graduate students in particular. Mm-hmm. but also what it means for students who are not in the United States currently, and how, you know, what happens in the future, like their, you know, when does their visas expire, and how does it, you know, how can they get back? I mean, there's other questions that we have too that we need to answer with regards to some of the policy implications here too.
Jim, I'm told that international students usually come into this country on one of three different kinds of visas. Will this affect all three?
Yeah, so the regulations are directed to the F and the M. So it's the traditional international students. It is not for the J-1 international students. So it's just Fs and Ms, and it's going to keep them from being able to, you know, settle and keep going. And, you know, besides the great contributions that international students make at these universities, they also pay the highest tuition rates. So in a lot of ways, they are sort of subsidizing American students' education, and losing out on this money is going to be a huge loss for the universities.
Mark, I'm wondering if you could speak to that. I've heard from many people in higher education that if colleges have to go online only, say that there are really big spikes, it's not safe to have in-person classes, and that means these students have to leave, that this could be catastrophic in terms of layoffs and just big problems for colleges' bottom lines. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, international students have contributed in upwards of $40 billion to the U.S. economy, and so the impact on institutions of higher education would be extraordinary. We've already seen it this past spring as institutions have aimed to recover from going online and all that was involved in that. But the big part would be what happens to our students who are forced, you know, based on this policy, would be forced to leave. I mean, I think that's the cruel part of this policy, that we're going to put human life at risk, and our students are having to make a choice as to whether or not they should go to class or if they have to go home. Mm-hmm. And whether or not they can even go home. We have students who are stuck in the United States right now, and they can't travel back to their home country.
And this is just because airlines have shut down international flights.
That's correct.
Some of these countries aren't allowing Americans back in. They could literally end up being caught between two places they're not allowed to be.
That's right.
One of the students who's going to be affected by this likely is a student at Washington University. His name is Victor Boutinier, and he's an international PhD student with a focus in French poetry and film. He's a member of the Graduate and Undergraduate Student Workers Union, and he spoke yesterday to St. Louis Public Radio reporter Chad Davis. Now, what Victor told Chad is that he could go back to live with his parents in France if he had to, but it would cause real hardship. He'd have to break his lease, pay to put his furniture in storage here, pay for an international flight home, and then there's the anxiety of what would happen if he gets there.
At some point, I might risk running out of money because so far we had this another guideline that came out in March, I think, telling us that basically, usually when you leave the US for more than 5 months, your visa is canceled and you cannot have access to your funding anymore, to your PhD funding. This was overruled by a guideline that said that there was no limitation anymore. But the thing that we don't know is whether the new ICE guidelines overrule the exception. So I may very well be sent back to France for the whole semester. And if I stay in France for more than 5 months, I'm going to lose my funding. So I would be at my parents with no source of income. And the thing is that I left France to the US and gave up on a lot of, like, you know, degrees and career prospects there. So I'm not very well equipped to go back to the, you know, to join the workforce in France.
WashU PhD student Victor Boutinier also explained what he's facing in the longer term.
Yeah, there's no solace to be found into this. It would just be an absolute disaster financially and also emotionally, because I've invested so much. Like, just in terms of cost, it would put me into bankruptcy. And my parents cannot afford to, you know, help me as much as they would like. I kind of sheltered them because I don't want them to be too worried about this. But they could not afford to, I mean, they could afford to have me at home, but not for too long because they, you know, they're not extremely rich either.
And that's WashU PhD student Victor Boutinier. Mark, are you hearing a lot of anxiety right now from students about these very sorts of things?
Yes, our students are taking probably the most emotional toll on their educational experience that has nothing to do with the rigors of their academic program. And I think that's probably one of the most difficult things to manage, I think, for our students, and as they're trying to negotiate all the things that everyone else is, and also being in another country in which policies are changing and their status and the ability to kind of feel that they're able to continue their educational studies, but also to just live life here. I mean, the reason why we have so many students come to the United States is because the opportunity to get such a great education and live in a country that, you know, really embraces a lot of the rich culture that we have and that we bring together.
Jim, I know there are people who are trying to fight this, and as typical with these things, it seems like the court of law might be the place to have to do it. Harvard and MIT have filed a lawsuit in federal court challenging this order. As an attorney, what do you make of their case?
Well, I was just looking it over before we got on the call, and I wouldn't say it's the absolute strongest case that I've seen. I'm a little bit worried about it because this is not a new rule, and it's arguably not a new interpretation of an existing rule. So many of the Trump immigration policies, including the DACA decision that have been thrown out by the courts, have been because they didn't go through the proper rulemaking procedure. So I'm sure that the universities are going to put everything they have into these lawsuits, but I'm a little bit worried that the courts might not be as receptive as they have been for a lot of the Trump immigration litigation.
We're talking to Jim Hacking. He's an attorney who specializes in immigration law with a Hacking Law practice. We're also joined today by Mark Kamimura Jimenez. He's the Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Dean of the Center for Diversity and Inclusion at Washington University. Now, as we spoke about earlier, a lot of students just feeling so much anxiety about this. And Victor Boutonnier, who's the PhD student that we heard from earlier, he went on Twitter a few days ago to rant about his dissatisfaction, some of which has to do with WashU's response. And here's how he described what triggered that rant.
It was about this, and it was also specifically about the response that WashU gave, or rather did not give, to us. Because when I see that Harvard and Yale and so many other universities are about to go up and they're going to challenge the decision in court, but WashU is still silent about this, and all the emails that we got so far was, well, basically, we are not going online this semester, so you will be okay, so we're not going to do anything. And then they sent us an email saying that if they were to go online, we would have to pack. No form of support whatsoever, except that, oh, this is very bad, but you'll have to pack and leave. And as I was saying on Twitter right before I joined this call, having to go back to France would straight up put me into bankruptcy.
And that's Victor Boutonnier. He's a PhD student. And obviously just a lot of anxiety here, a lot of uncertainty. But it sounds like he's hoping WashU would do more. Now, that was yesterday morning when we spoke with him. Wanted to make that clear. But Mark, from WashU's perspective, is there anything you guys can do at this point?
Well, we are filing an amicus brief. I'd like to say that, you know, it's an unfortunate situation for our students to have to receive this news, both, you know, trying to interpret the federal guidelines when they see them, but also that we try to put together summaries for our students so that they understand, like, kind of, you know, what it is that the policy or guideline is trying to explain. And it's hard because we are, you know, summarizing something that we, you know, don't agree with, that we feel like is harsh and hurtful to our students' experience, but they have to know what the guideline is. You know, a lot has changed since yesterday, and we are, you know, trying to make some major moves within the campus to address the gaps within this guideline. You know, we are filing an amicus brief to support the Harvard MIT lawsuits, and you know, we have to push back for our students.
Well, that's great to hear. And Jim, was that you there? I'd love to hear from you.
I mean, one is, I understand the frustration of the PhD student, but I mean, this rule came out 3 days ago. I think WashU is doing as well a job as they can. It's a very confusing time, and there's been very little guidance. But the reason I wanted to jump in is because the judge has given the parties the defendants, the government defendants, till noon on Monday to respond, and they're going to have a hearing on a temporary restraining order next Wednesday. I just saw that.
And okay, this might even be breaking news here. Is that right, Jim?
Apparently so.
So this is at least on a fast track. I know overall you're a little worried about its long-term prospects, but a judge is going to make sure it's heard in a timely way. In the meantime, Jim, I imagine you're probably hearing from a lot of students wondering what they can do. Is there any good advice for them at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm given sort of the same advice WashU's given, and I think it's all that you can do. You can say, look, it's going to be litigated, and then universities are doing the best that they can. Students might want to look at other schools that are, if they already know their school is going to be completely online, then they need to adjust. But I also think that the universities themselves are probably all in flux now, too. Even those that were all we're going to be all online are now probably looking for options to try to protect their students.
And it seems like, as you were alluding to earlier, that may be what President Trump was up to with this. This is maybe a way to pressure universities, not just crack down on international students, although knowing his thoughts on immigration, he might like the twofer there. Is that part of what you think is going on, Jim?
I think that's exactly right. He gets something to try to help his lagging campaign, and he gets to be cruel to immigrants one more time.
We looked into this, and we're not aware of any local higher education institutions that are at this point planning to go online only. But we did hear from some of them, including St. Louis University President Fred Pastello. He issued a statement saying that universities were aware they might have to pivot. He said at some point during the fall term, universities could be forced to consider another pivot to online instructions. Under the new regulations, this pivot would require international students to return home. And Mark, it sounds like that's the problem for you at Washington University as well, that if this is allowed to stand, it really cuts off some options or puts a whole bunch of students in a bad place. Is that fair to say?
And well, yes, it definitely would if we were to take it, take this guidance without understanding what that what flexibilities we may have within that guidance. And I think Victor spoke to it well, which is that the government came out and said one thing and then changed their mind and said, oh, well, you know, we have to pivot over here, right? That the whole world pivoted at the moment. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we also need to think about how we're communicating back using our professional associations and contacts in DC to make sure that our government is aware of the impact this is having on our students and the impact that it has on our universities and the research that is informing our healthcare systems and everything else that makes our country a great place to be.
So you guys do not intend to take this lying down?
No.
And Jim, I know that's not the case for you either. So I think we're going to have to keep an eye on this. It sounds like Monday, some more things may become clear. I know you'll be watching that. So you'll have to keep us in the loop. And Jim Hacking of the Hacking Law Practice, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Sarah.
And Mark Camamura Jimenez of Washington University, thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Thank you.
And Mark, again, is the Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. He's also the Dean of the Center for Diversity and Inclusion at Washington University. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.